Well, I think hospice is possibly the best movement that has developed in Ireland in recent years. I'm one of the patrons of the Kerry Hospice, and I'm connected also with the hospice in Dublin 15. And I think the number of hospices will grow.
Mm-hmm.
And even though we're very much in modern times and people sometimes decry the olden ways, I think it's a throwback to what Ireland was even before Christianity, that everything was local. And you did have places locally all over Ireland where people with certain illnesses went. And I come from County Kerry, and there's a famous place there called Glaunignalt. And that was the place where people suffering from mental illnesses came that time, on the basis that there was a cure in the watercress. If you like, it was a type of faith, but it was also a place where those people were kept and looked after. It was only a glen, it might have been outdoors, it might have been huts and all that. And then several places all over Ireland. I'm very interested in place names, and even very near Dublin where we are at the moment, you have Leopard Sound. The Irish for Leopard Sound is Ballinalour. And that was a location where people suffering maybe from skin ailments, leprosy would be the extreme form of that, where they collected, where they were safe, where they were looked after. It was a refuge for those. And you have places with the word Lower all over the country. Again, to go back to Tralee, Kerry, the place in Kerry was Cluain na Lower, the open fields where the lepers gathered. So again, it was local. And I think that is the principle of the hospice. And I think it's great that attention for people needing care, whether they're young or old, suffering from certain illnesses, it should be as local as possible. And I'm delighted to see it develop.
Caroline, you're communications officer with the Irish Hospice Foundation. Why did you decide on this project?
Every number of years, the Irish Hospice Foundation produces a publication. It really is the signature of our fundraising, and it allows us to raise the profile of the organisation and to raise significant funding for our work. This has been in gestation for a number of years, and we've had a number of individuals who've been involved, such as John Waters is the editor of the book. Maeve Binchy has introduced the book. So it's something that we've been kind of thinking about, kind of working on for a number of years. And the whole idea is basically it's a template to allow people to write their own stories or to record the history of their families. And we have a number of individuals, writers, famous people in Ireland, who kindly allowed us to take extracts from their autobiographies and memoirs to introduce each section. Because what we did with the book is we've divided it up into a number of sections to make it easier for people to recall their history. So they can write about their sports, they can write about their education, dreams they had, significant turning points in their lives. And before each chapter, before each section, we've taken an extract from an Irish memoir. And then throughout the book, there are first lines from other famous memoirs from people internationally as well, because very often it's the hardest thing is to sit down and write that first line. So we thought this would make it a lot easier for people. So as I say, it is a template to allow people to sit down and to record their life so far or the history of their families. And people can approach it really as a solo project, or they can collaborate with other members of their family. So, for example, we see that maybe a grandchild might sit down and work on this with their grandmother or their grandfather.
And of course, it's a lovely time of the year to be looking at this book, even though we don't really want to mention the word Christmas, but it's an ideal present for people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a present that is available all year round, but we are launching it in this special time, and we would hope that a lot of people would see it as the perfect kind of Yuletime present for their families. So we would encourage people to consider this present. They probably need a very big sock in order to put it wrap it for their families. But we hope that it is something that people will pick up for Christmas.
Now, one of the people that contributed to your book is Micheál Ó Muirchertach.
Yes, he has been so generous to us. I think he's known for being that kind of character, and he's been incredibly good to the hospice. And basically, we took an extract from his own autobiography to start the whole chapter on sports lives.
My first visit to Croke Park. Now, it occurred way back in 1948. That's the setting. I was no more than 10 days in Dublin at the time. And of course, I had heard of Croke Park long before I came to Dublin. and 'twould have been an ambition to see it and the realisation of a dream, even to walk in, to look at the pitch, to look at where Micheál O'Hare's box used to be, to look at the Hogan stand that we heard about and so on. So it's the little piece I wrote, and it is edited, so I'll read a little bit of it for you now. I was in St. Patrick's Training College at the time, and it was known as Pat's. One of the great advantages of Pat's was its proximity to Croke Park, hardly a mile away. I had not long to wait for my first visit. There was neither talk nor a need of a ticket, as a few of us set off to see the All-Ireland football final between Cavan and Mayo. It was a much different Croke Park then, withstanding the order of the day for more than 80% of spectators. On the east side of the pitch, the tall Cusack stand, supported by huge pillars, seated about 6,000 spectators, with standing room underneath. There were three other stands on the opposite side. The long stand, a plain structure with a low corrugated iron roof that gave protection from the elements, that ranged from the corner flag at the canal end to roughly midfield. It was more a barn with an opening on one side than a stand, and on big days, spectators were helped up onto the roof for a better view of the game. Then next to that came the broadcasting box, well known on account of Micheál O'Hare. And after the broadcasting box came the Hogan stand, which ran towards the railway end. That was the fashionable area. Beyond the Hogan stand was the corner stand. But we found ourselves standing under the Cusack, close enough to Hill 16, the famous terrace at the railway end. An ideal position as events unfolded that day.